Hi everyone, this is Michael Walton here with Thomas Urano, who leads the portfolio management team at Sage, here with a mid-year update. And things have been changing so fast. I think it's very important to timestamp this conversation. It's July 7th at about 8 in the a.m. I want to start by saying that we recognize how difficult this market environment has been. We put this recording together just so you have a convenient way to listen, but let me emphasize, do not hesitate to reach out to your friends at Sage to talk specifics. We're always here to share our best thoughts and help out with any client conversations. I think as we look back at the first half of the year, I think it can be characterized by three things. One, rising and persistent inflation. Two, a monetary response to meaningfully tightened conditions. And three, a significant retrenchment in financial assets and risk premiums across the board. Duration, credit, equities. I would characterize this as the kitchen sink correction. It's everything in the kitchen sink, in the sense that, U.S. fixed income logged its worst start of the year ever, while U.S. equities had its worst first half since 1970, and there really haven't been too many places to hide. And listen, the goal of our conversation today is to tackle the key issues facing fixed income investors. This is complicated. A lot of these issues are interconnected. I'm really going to focus less on how we got here and how bad it is, but we really want to unravel the key issues in a way that gives us and you a sense of how to move forward. So Thomas, I thought it would be really good to kind of start with the baseline playbook, our baseline playbook for the back half of the year. And so can you just give us the kind of high level talking points?
Yeah, sure, of course. So with rising recession risk, we think the Fed is likely going to slow the pace of rate hikes, possibly even take a pause in the second half of the year, and that leads to a much more stable rate environment in the second half. I think the biggest risk is going to be liquidity and credit risk premiums. We're managing those through sector allocations and issuer diversification within the portfolio structure. However, ultimately, these are going to become the biggest opportunities in the second half of the year. We're building up lots of dry powder to take advantage of what we think will be ultimately attractive risk premiums that will manifest in the second half. Ultimately, bond math is going to be working in our favor. We're seeing yields in the north of 4% range on intermediate or core strategies. That's going to be able to carry the performance through the second half of this year. So our outlook for fixed income is pretty good for the second half.
That's great. Thanks. All right, so let's start with the Fed, and they've worked to dramatically shift their policy to create much tighter financial conditions. And let's talk first about how this has manifested itself in capital markets.
So the Fed's goal of tightening policy is working. It's working. We're seeing higher interest rates, rising credit premiums, right? That is raising the cost of capital. And then we're also seeing softer, lower liquidity conditions, and that's limiting new issue supply, new issue access. Ultimately, what does that mean? Companies, when they come to market to borrow capital for CapEx or long-term investments, are having its limited access and a higher cost of capital. Ultimately, kind of that brings down excessive credit use and spending.
And how are the tighter financial conditions impacting or flowing through to economic data?
We're seeing that work as well. Again, if the Fed's goal is to raise rates in order to slow the economy, and that ultimately tries to combat or pull down inflation, then I would say it's starting to work. Economic data is coming in weaker than projected. The recent Citi Economic Surprise Index is reading near a decade low. The latest ISM manufacturing survey is showing weakness across the board, and notably, sharp weakness in new orders out of that subcomponent. Bottom line is all central banks around the globe are in tightening mode simultaneously, and that's creating this growth slowdown. And it's not just a U.S. domestic U.S. issue, it's a global phenomenon. Growth is slowing globally right now. And this rotation from a slowdown to possible recession is happening around the world, and I think that that's where you can see central bank policy is working in its goal to try and slow inflation.
Got it. And let's talk about the consumer. The consumer has been extremely resilient, but of late they've had to, they've really been feeling the impact of higher inflation. But now you kind of layer in tighter financial conditions.
Yeah. So the consumer is in a very tough spot, right? Inflation is creating this demand destruction, You're seeing rising food costs, rising energy costs, rising housing costs. All of that is squeezing the consumer's disposable income, disposable spending dollars, right? And that ends up reducing the amount of money that gets spent on other goods and services. Savings rates are down, credit card balances are rising, cost of capital is higher in the form of mortgage rates for the consumer. Again, all of that squeezing the consumer's ability to spend. Hopefully this is all showing through. Most recently, we got a number of updates from major retailers across the country. They all were guiding down on terms of sales and forward earnings. And they also all noted a substantial rise in inventories, which is indicative of consumer demand starting to wane.
So it's a really good segue. So, you know, policy is working to slow demand. But I think the bigger challenge on the inflation front is on the supply side.
Right. So supply is going to be the big challenge here. Obviously, supply constraints and logistics challenges on supply chains have been a large contributor to the inflation problem. That is outside the Fed's control. Geopolitics outside the Fed's control. So there are factors at work that may be counterproductive to this effort to slow inflation. But that's all supply side driven and really not something that's going to be impacted by monetary policy.
And I, you know, markets don't like uncertainty. And I feel like the thing we're all grappling with now is trying to understand the extent of the economic slowdown. Is this going to be short and really sharp, or is it going to be a longer, more protracted, maybe a more mild recession or slowdown?
Right. If you think about this growth slowdown and or recession in terms of severity, the notion of a very short but sharp recession, we believe would trigger the Fed to likely reverse course, even turn around and start providing support to the markets, not in the sense to drive market prices up, but to support market functionality, right? However, our base case is not that. Our base case is more for a mild and drawn out recession, right? Growth slows, maybe low single digits, sub 1% growth, maybe negative a quarter or two. But in a more drawn out scenario where we have this mild recession that goes on, I think the Fed is more than happy to let it run its course. And in that scenario, from a performance standpoint, portfolio standpoint, performance is going to be driven by yield again, right? We won't be looking for price gains from falling yields. We'll be looking for that income in the portfolio to really drive performance.
Got it. And listen, as bond managers, I feel like we're wired to solve for the worst case scenario first in the form of defaults and then find ways to earn money for our clients. And, you know, if our base case is that policy is working and growth is slowing, signs point to inflation moderating, what are the risks to that view?
Yeah, the risk is that you get the exact opposite, right? The risk is that this growth slowdown runs its course in short order, and in the second half of this year, global economies turn around and start reaccelerating, right? Growth starts reaccelerating again. In that scenario, inflation is going to be pressured to stay elevated, and central banks, the Fed, the ECB, all central banks are going to have to reengage and almost double down their efforts to raise rates to try and cause the slowdown.
And let's go back to the playbook you mentioned, and if you will, kind of relate it to specific positioning that's happening within our portfolios as you think about the second half of the year. So you mentioned a more stable rate environment. Listen, at the start of the year, interest rate markets were pricing in a Fed funds rate of 82 basis points at the end of this year. Fast forward to 6:30, and markets are discounting a 333 basis point Fed funds rate by the end of 22. Talk about kind of rates and how that view of a more stable rate environment is playing out in the positioning of our portfolios.
Yeah, I think markets have digested the bulk of their expected rate hikes out of the Fed. Futures markets priced up, as you said, almost 3 3/8 type yield level for Fed funds. And I think the risk is that the Fed stops short of that. But in that environment, the reason we think rates are going to be stable in the second half is because most of this pricing is already built into the market. No need to price the Fed even further beyond that.
So you mentioned the biggest risk is liquidity risk and credit premiums. And at the start of the year, investment grade corporate bond spreads were 92 basis points over with a yield of around 2.3. As of 6:30, the spread had widened out to 155 for the IG corporate bond index. but the all-in yield is 470. So talk about how we're positioning for both the kind of liquidity risk and credit premium.
Yeah, so on the credit side, we are seeing that repricing of investment grade credit risk right now, right? And I think that's a function of Fed policy being effective, causing a slowdown, and now credit investors are beginning to worry about either downgrade or default risk. And in that scenario, you're seeing the investment grade market and the high yield market increase risk premiums. So that move from 92 basis points on the investment grade corporate market to 155, that's a good start, but I think there's more to go on that front. There's a bit more weakness you need. However, as we get to the high hundreds, maybe the 175 level, a little wider than that possibly, investment grade credit historically begins looking very attractive at those levels. To that end, what we want to do within our portfolio structure is maintain some dry powder and try and onboard some risk premiums in sectors or issuers where we have high confidence and be able to onboard a very cheap risk premium into the portfolio, and that will be a driver of performance for us.
And let's talk diversification. You know, our president, Bob Smith, correctly identified the kind of biggest issue in the first half of the year and what was ultimately a black swan, a very, very rare and unlikely occurrence, is the breakdown of correlations between stocks and bonds. It's that kind of played its way through most of the first half of the year. But over the last month or so, we've started to see a return to more normal behavior.
Yeah, so in the first half of this year, what we saw and noticed was as the Fed is engaged in this monetary policy to slow the economy, it had to reprice rates higher, and then also had to kind of derate equity valuations lower. All of that is a scenario where you saw, you know, bond performance negative, stock performance negative, and again, that historical unusual correlation. I think as we're nearing the end or the possibility that the Fed takes a pause and that recession risk is rising and that their policy is working, we've just recently noticed those correlations between stocks and bonds revert back to a normal level, meaning we did see yields fall, we did see treasuries rally in a scenario where equities pulled back as we saw more and more data about the economy slowing. So I think as we get into the second half, if the Fed does pause, then we can revert back to those normal correlations between stocks and bonds.
All right, so Thomas, let's end on a high note and talk income and yield. You know, you mentioned the higher overall level of yields being a key to kind of our playbook to have positive returns in the back half of the year. So you obviously have much more income to kind of work through volatility, but talk this out.
Yeah, income has always been the predominant driver of performance. Like historically, over a cycle, income is about 85% of performance in a fixed income portfolio. And to that end, with yields in the north of 4% range, we think it sets up a nice income cushion, a baseline to generate income over the second half of the year. In addition, we expect to see yields more range bound, maybe a little bit of price volatility associated with credit risk, but ultimately portfolio yields likely range bound. That sets a scenario where we can generate performance out of the income component, and that will be sufficient income there to justify any fluctuations in terms of yield and or price movement.
Love bond math, letting bond math do its thing. And the other point I would make is maybe just the importance of having active management in times like this. You know, a manager like Sage that can onboard premiums, risk premiums, but take advantage of high value credits and let them be a meaningful part of the portfolio to add performance above and beyond what is structurally available in the bond market today. I want to thank everybody for your time today. I mentioned this earlier, but we certainly hope this was helpful, but please don't hesitate to reach out to your friends at Sage if you'd like to talk any of this out. Thanks so much.
Sage Advisory Services is a registered investment advisor that provides investment management services for a variety of institutions and high net worth individuals. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended as investment advice or an offer or solicitation with respect to the purchase or sale of any security, strategy, or an investment product. Investors should make their own decisions on investment strategies based on their specific investment objectives and financial circumstances. All investments contain risk and may lose value. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. For additional information on Sage and its investment management services, please view our website at www.sageadvisory.com or refer to our form ADV, which is available upon request by calling 512-327-5530.